Morgan Otto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way! No!
Well, Brock, we've made it to March. Was that the most interesting February in Seattle sports history?
Ever.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't say history. Since basketball left, since the Sonics left. Is that the most eventful February we've had?
Well, there was a couple Super Bowls in February.
Drama-wise. Yeah, I guess you're right. You had a couple of Super Bowls to react to.
One of them was memorable, and one was really memorable.
Right, I guess I meant sort of over the whole length of the month, but good point. You're right.
One was memorable and which one was really memorable? I could go either way on that.
Yeah, Brock, which one do you remember better? That's an interesting psychological conversation and experiment. Which do you remember better?
Do the wins stay with you longer, or do the tough losses stick with you?
It's the losses, right?
It's my cold, dead heart.
It's got to be.
Walked in and said, it's the first day of the rest of our lives.
Right, but not in a good way.
And it was.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's certainly been interesting.
Just when you think it kind of dies down too, okay, it's going to kind of die down, right? Russ did his deal. He had his little temper tantrum and let it out. And his frustrations were aired and his grievances were felt. And then it's going to die. Whoa, what is this?
It keeps coming
back. What? Four teams that he'd be willing to go to from Schefter? What? He and his camp just won't pack it away. Well, they're just keeping a camp. They're just keeping camp going.
So I got two questions
around
there, for you.
Sitting around the fireside each night, okay, what now? What are we going to do next?
Two questions for you, Brock. First one is, do you think that this is still the kind of, is it still a problem? Or does it feel at times like they are reacting to things that have already been taken care of?
I was flabbergasted. I think of anything, even more than the Dan Patrick. When that tweet came from Schefter, that was the most jaw-dropping of anything. That is when I'm hearing from Waddle and Sylvie in Chicago. That's when I'm hearing from Linda Cohn. That's when that reverberated, I think, honestly, more loudly than even Dan Patrick coming at Russ. Because that was after the Super Bowl. That's Walter Payton Man of the Year. That's fresh with emotion. He's sitting up there in the box with the commish and Ciara, and frustrated. The fact that's
7 years.
Mark, you're always on that one.
Long time.
I hear both ways.
But it's Ciara.
The princess is here. Ciara!
Anybody else who says Ciara is wrong.
Okay, fine, Ciara. The fact that Schefter tweeted that that was the most jaw-dropping to me.
Yeah.
You're now in your camp and your team is now going to the biggest information broker in the league right now and saying, yeah, these are the four teams that we'd be willing to beat. What? What? So, no, I don't think it's died down. And I think Russ and his camp and his crew are not going to let it die down. Until we hear from Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Linda Cohn asked me repeatedly, Salk, you would have loved this because you love Elko.
You know I do.
She's on Mad Dog Radio on the weekend. Mm-hmm. She's got a big show. And she's like, why haven't John and Pete addressed this? Why haven't John and Pete talked about this? We've even heard from the Slappies.
I feel the same way. Not surprisingly, I stand with Elko.
Of course. Of course. So
To not give it the time of day. You don't recognize it. Okay, you go in the corner and cry your eyes out. Just let him cry it out.
It does feel
that
way.
He's in his crib. He's crying it out.
Yeah, it's kind of the hey, use your words. Either ask for a trade or don't whine and cry. But I don't know. I understand that sort of we don't need to respond, so we don't have to. I understand that mentality. If I were the Seahawks, if I were Pete especially, I'd be out there talking because Pete's good at talking about this. I've never heard anybody better at diffusing these things with words. So I don't know. What's the upside of letting it fester?
Well, John's not going to talk.
Okay? No, I wouldn't let John near a microphone right now. Are you kidding me?
Because I'm sure he's peeved.
I'm not saying John should talk. Yeah. I said Pete should talk. There's a difference.
John.
John, go out there and tell you exactly. John.
What are you going to say? John.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need this gun anymore, John. I can do it, John. Yeah, no, nobody wants John out there.
he's so mad right now too. You know, he's in his office all
fuming.
Oh, he's just pissed.
Yes. I think he's talking, but not into a microphone.
Right.
He's making phone calls.
Yeah, but Pete.
Why is he doing this?
But Pete's
Pete
great.
Can go on with Pat Kerwin and our buddy down there. What was her name that listens to the Kerwin show all the
Jacqueline.
Time?
Jacqueline loves moving the chains with Pat Kerwin. Shout out, Jacqueline.
So Pete can jump on with Pat, text him, say, hey, can I just come on? Let's just talk a little ball. And I gotta just squelch this. Enough of this. And Pete goes on there and says, Russ's our guy. Like, I understand his frustrations. I get it. He wants to win. He's a competitor. He wakes up and his eyes are wide open like mine every morning to win. And he wants to win, and we're going to win with him. Period. End of story. Yeah. It's over. It's over.
Right.
But they're not. He's not doing it, and John's not doing it.
They should.
Why?
Well, maybe they like getting calls. Maybe they're bored. Maybe, like everybody else, they're home all the time. They've got a quarantine thing. They're not out. And so people are calling them. They're arranging Zoom calls for their buddies around the league. It's a good excuse to check in with my friends in Pittsburgh or my friends in Dallas. They're like... Well, you know, we need an excuse to call.
Hey, let's jump on a Zoom call.
Sure.
You joke about that, but honestly,
Friday night, you know, we'll get together, our wives, hang out. Like, yeah.
We'll share an app. Let's see. What do you want to do? Edamame? We could each do that.
Yeah. What do you like? You like Zoom? Do you like to go with different teams? Or, you know, what do you. Sure.
Do you want me to invite John over? No. No. Don't invite John.
Don't invite John right now. No, he's too mad.
So mad.
He's too mad. So, sorry. Second question then, Brock. What does Russ want?
Attention.
You're not Brock.
What's your name?
Jeez.
And where in the heck is Boy Howdy for crying
I'm
out
taking
loud?
His role.
So that you're just answering questions being asked of other people?
You is ask Howdy for an ever, expert, you get me.
Is Howdy ever coming back to this podcast
no,
for crying out
thankfully.
Loud?
Thankfully.
Goodness
He'll
gracious.
Be back next week. What does Russ really want?
That's a you don't want to hear my answer to that, so let Kyle answer it.
Kyle did. He said attention.
I think the genesis right at the very center of so much of this is Russ's trust in Pete. And I don't know what he wants, but I think he is making it public his questioning of whether or not Pete A has too much power and B is still the guy to lead this organization to a championship.
And if you're asking that question, ask for a trade. But he's not doing that. So I can't believe that he's all the way to, you know, I don't trust Pete and I don't think he's the right guy. Because if he was, he'd say so. He'd come out and ask for a trade. But he's not. He's like, you know, insinuating it. And, yep. And if I did, then that, like, I don't know. I get what you're saying. And I think there is a real question there about how much control Pete has on the organization. I think there's I don't know the answer to it. I mean... I think we had some semblance of what that was like when Paul was alive. I don't have any idea what it's like now, and I don't know anything about. I saw Mike Florio's article, but Mike Florio comes from being an agent and generally gets all of his information from agents. So while I like Florio, I'm not a Florio hater like some others are. I still gotta consider the source on that. So Florio saying that Pete runs unchecked and the ownership is a problem. Well, he's anti-ownership. Like, that's his bias, and that's fine. Like, it doesn't bother me. I like Mike Florio, but you know, that information came from agents. So, okay, whatever. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Yep.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know.
The other thought process is that Russ is trying to save face, that he's been talked about
just
as one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. He's now being pointed out. He hasn't taken his team to an NFC championship game in 7 years. That he's saying, hey, it's not me. It's everyone around me. It's the offensive line. They don't protect me. It's the weapons. There's not enough. It's the head coach. He's antiquated. Don't look at me. I am elite. I know my track record and my accomplishments don't quite say that the last 7 years.
And these friction sparks are what come in a relationship over the long term with elite players. And we saw them with the defensive players for years. In the tension that arose and the credit that they wanted and the frustration that Richard Sherman had, the frustration that Earl Thomas had, the frustration that those guys had on that side of the ball that, you know, they couldn't win another championship and Pete was screwing it up. And right. I mean, we heard a lot of that and it was part of the reason that a few of them exited stage right.
Why would this come then after the Shane Waldron hire? That's the part. So, Brock, your point is a good one about asking about Pete's power, Pete's control. Oh, that's fair. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if that was your issue and you just had a voice, by all accounts, in the Shane Waldron hire.
Correct.
What's the problem? Can't you be quiet for a little while and let it play its way out before you keep going?
Correct.
That's the mystery to me.
Or maybe you slept on it and thought, okay, you know, like, oh, just hey, a kid's going to fix our marriage. If we just have a kid, it's going to fix our marriage. We're going to feel, oh, if I just get that next job, if I get a raise.
But it's not like that. It's not that kind of a thing. It's not.
And then you realize, dang, it's not. That doesn't fulfill it.
That's not the right comparison, though. It's like, hey, let's go to therapy to try to save our marriage. And before you have one session, you're like, you know what? Therapy's not working. You didn't try it.
Yeah.
I mean, they just went out and by all accounts together were in on the hire for Shane Waldron, that this was the guy he liked.
Yes.
So why continue to come out and like, those are the things that have kind of bugged me.
That's why.
Led me to wonder if Russell's just like the information is coming out late. Like it's already like they're reacting to something a month or two ago and just now it's coming up. But I don't know, man, it's a mystery.
It is, and that's why I think, honestly, at the center of it is just a heart-to-heart. Does Russ still trust that Pete's the guy that can do this, that can steward the whole organization and steward the decision-making that needs to happen and the game management and the style and all of it? And, oh, by the way, the NFC West just keeps getting better, and it's going to get even tougher. And J.J. Watt's now coming to town with Chandler Jones, who I didn't even have to face last year. And, oh, by the way, Bosa's coming back, and that whole crew is coming back. And I know what it's felt like to play these teams in this division that know me inside and out and know how challenging it is to play them.
Then ask out. If that's what you want, then ask out.
He went halfway. Nah. I mean, he started
Don't
the conversation.
Don't dip your toe in. Ask out. Do it. I dare you. Like, I double dare you. Like, I just, the in-between, this feels very Favrian.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. I don't like Favrian. I'm anti-Farv.
Russ going to be wearing Crocs soon. It's going to be problematic.
And Dockers.
I mean, I remember the late Frank Stegen telling me this about different real estate deals and my own home and other real estate. Like, okay, if you're going to put it on the market, like, you got to be willing to accept full price offer comes in. Or, you know, like, if you don't really want to sell, then don't hire a broker and don't put it on the market. Because if that full price offer comes in, what are you going to do?
Dude, that was a long time ago. Nobody sells for full price here in Seattle anymore.
Nope.
Full price offer, we'll send it back. If you're
not a little low.
If you're not 10, 20% over, I'm not even listening to your
offer.
What kind
of escalators we got on that deal?
Exactly. So, all right, well, we'll see where this goes. We'll see what the next saga is. And we'll talk to Albert Breer about this and get some of that national perspective on this. In the meantime, Brock, you know, it's been, what, just over a week here since the Kevin Mather thing went down with the Mariners. And I guess we talked last week about this being an opportunity for the team now kind of moving forward. I would say that a week later, I find myself even more certain that this is an opportunity and a good positive one for them.
Mm-hmm.
That they have a really good chance to make a better organization and to have a better team because of it. Now, we talked last week sort of about the front office part. I think it's a great chance for them. Repeal the teal, change your name, change your uniform. Like,
they're not changing the name.
All right, you don't have to change the name, but repeal the teal for sure.
Okay, all right.
We can all agree to get rid of the uniforms and make major changes, and you're probably a year away from that because you kind of want this next group to kind of be like as ready as they can be. But hire the best. Make it clear, Brock, as you stated perfectly and eloquently last week, that you care more about winning than business. You have opportunities now to do that, although it's hard to do that by hiring a president. That president needs to then help you do it. But your president's supposed to help you make money so that everything else can work out on the field, right? That's kind of their job. But to do it in such a way that you don't look bad doing it.
Well, and that president can then empower.
Yes.
A Jerry and a Scott, if, you know, they've got an opportunity this year. And I think if anybody is a beneficiary, honestly, a week later, I think the biggest beneficiaries and those that can gain the most are those two.
Based on how they've handled it, because they were in the toughest spot a week ago.
Yes, but Scott now has an opportunity, and you've seen it with the t-shirts mm-hmm. that were very boring.
Well, I'm going to get to that in a moment.
Right? I mean, he has an opportunity to bring the whole clans together mm-hmm. and have so much emotion behind it. And for Jerry, you know, I think he expressed himself very clearly a week ago and shared his frustration and should be empowered through the decision-making to do everything we can to win. And if that means Jared Kelnick is up day one because he's earned it and we're going to give him that chance, and by God, we're in this thing to win. That is what we're doing. And I don't know if it's going to be 2021, and we're not winning big, and we're not setting unrealistic expectations, but everything we do every single minute of every single day of every single week of every single month in the baseball season is to win and give ourselves the best chance to do it. And he's got the keys, I think, to help drive that.
Do we all agree that they should make a run at Theo Epstein?
Yes.
Right? I mean, we all, it seems to be fairly commonly agree that you have to do that. By the way, just checking in with people around the game, it does sound like he might be willing to listen next year.
Wasn't Theo a BBN guy, too?
No, he's not. He's a Brookline High guy.
Oh, Brookline.
Yeah. He's a couple of years older than me. But, yep. You know, by all accounts, or not all accounts, from what I have heard, and this is not like directly from Theo or his camp or anything like that, that maybe he'd be willing to listen next year, not for 21, but for 22. And if you hold the job open for a year, which I would think they would do anyway to kind of let it clear, that maybe you do have a chance at Theo. You got to pay him a ton of money and you got to, you know, probably give him a small ownership stake and all of that. But I think that's worth it. The question is, does Jerry stick around at that point, or can they work together? Is Theo too involved in player development?
Did you tweet something? Weren't they connected somewhere, some way? Somehow?
They are sort of connected. I mean, like Jerry worked for Josh Burns, who was a Theo guy who worked for Theo.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, like they sort of run in the same circles, I guess I would say, in baseball world. But I would think they, I think that if you bring in Theo, yeah, he's going to help and offer advice in how to organize baseball ops. But I think part of it is he wants the next challenge and you're trying to give that to him, right?
Yes. The next step up the ladder. And as you said, maybe partial ownership and everything's got to be on the table. And then ultimately, if he judges the work of Jerry not being good enough, I don't think there's anybody else that you would want making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd want, you know, Mr. Stanton doing that or anybody, you know, at the ownership level or the presidency level. You bring somebody in that's done at the highest level in that position.
And
he would be the best evaluator.
Sure.
Of the job that Jerry is truly doing.
That's a very good point. Now, interestingly, Jerry's deal is up this year, so you're going to have to make a decision on Jerry before you do that, in all likelihood. But that's all going to be part of that conversation together. That's the front office part of it. The other side, Brock, is could this actually help them on the field this year? And I know it sort of sounds weird, but I don't know. I watched them the other day in their first walk-off win in their first Cactus League game, and I am aware that it means exactly zero to walk off your first Cactus League game. But it was cool. It meant nothing, but it was cool watching, you know, Julio Rodriguez walk it off.
Who drove in?
Yeah, it was Julio.
Is Julio Rodriguez with a chance to win it. Markel looks in, the sign, here he delivers, swing and a line drive, base hit, straightaway center. Here comes Kelnick on the score, and the Mariners win the ball game.
I mean, come on.
5-4, Julio Rodriguez wins it with an RBI single here in the bottom of the ninth inning to take game one of the 2021 Cactus League season.
I mean,
that's pretty fun.
It's cool.
In comes Kelnick.
It doesn't mean anything, but it's kind of cool.
Yes.
Could this help them on the field? Could this continue to bond this team together? Could this be the Herb Brooks U.S. hockey team miracle approach where they are so bonded in their dislike for somebody that they end up coming together with their very boring shirts and all that? They're all wearing the shirts that say very boring. Yeah. I found myself thinking about Miracle.
Cruise on the leg is a hell of a long way from the heart. Candy ass. What'd you call me?
You heard me.
You want me to play, huh? Is that what you want?
I want you to be a hockey player.
I am a hockey player. You want me to play on one leg? Huh? I'll play on one leg.
That'll get him going.
Get up.
Kevin Mather walks away from the Rotary Club.
That'll get him going.
That'll get him going, boys.
Oh, I got little goosebumps right there in my hair.
Oh, that's the best.
On my arms.
I haven't watched Miracle in a couple of weeks. Gosh, I might need to do that
about
again.
About time.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks since I've watched Miracle.
Mike, well, it not only helped the clubhouse. Think about it. You could have a very boring night. You could have a whole section up there, 300 level, with their cats and the knitting night.
Like, yes.
That's the boring
grove.
Yes. That's the boring grove up there.
You joke about, don't make, this is the antithesis of the Maple Grove. This is real. This is the players potentially finding a real common bond and then trying to like outplay their lot in life.
Why the shots at the, you circle out, that's quite a detour to get to a shot at the Maple Grove, Mike.
Can't help
why?
It. Why? It's
Didn't
easy.
Did you see the whole thread a couple weeks ago?
Oh, yeah. Sticker is furious at me.
Very mad.
I know.
Maybe we should get Stickeriz on the podcast.
If something happens with like a tree in my, like if I get like tree poisoned, yes, like down at Auburn, I'll know that Stickeriz is out there doing his bidding.
Every time you hear the sound of wind,
or her, I don't
just
know
that right. is the Maple Grove haunting you.
Haunting, yeah.
Mike, it can work uh-huh. as long as those players don't feel a level of dysfunction. It can work as long as they believe in Scott and the mm-hmm. way he's managing the bullpen. It can work as long as they believe in Jerry and the decisions that he's making and the yep. acquisitions he's making and the moves he may or may not make during the season. It can work as long as decisions about the roster and who's going to be on it, you know, the players buy into. So
yeah, this is your Adam Lind theory, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was a great conversation.
But repeat it, though. I mean, this is you learned a lot from Adam Lind, of all people.
Oh, one little conversation, just being out there shaking balls and walking off and you know, just kind of talking about the culture and that clubhouse. And that's when, you know, service was having all the meetings and everybody getting to know everybody. And Lind's like, yeah, whatever. It's all great. How's he going to manage a bullpen? Like, you know,
I don't care about all that stuff.
Yeah, that's really great. I now know, you know, the middle name of the third baseman. Maybe I don't really care.
I don't care.
Yeah, maybe I tune out. You know, but that's fine. I mean, the younger guys want all that. But the bottom line, how's our bullpen in August? Mm-hmm. How's he managed the thing over the course of the season? How healthy are we? So I think this emotion can work for a little bit. I think it can bring, you know, the crew together. They can have, you know, a common bond and everything else between Paxton and Marco and Kyle and some of the guys, Mitch, that, you know, that shots were fired at. But ultimately, right, you know that, especially in baseball, my goodness, over the grind of the season, yeah. how are the decision making in between Jerry and Scott and players continue to buy into that?
I know that it's spring and beginning of March and it's, you know, every year it's easy to kind of look at your team and get excited. But can you kind of look at this lineup and get excited? Like, is it? It's better than it was a year ago, right?
Yeah. Well, who's going to be in the lineup?
I don't know. Well, I think you got to see it. I mean, really, the first couple games, they've shown something pretty close to what's going to be a major league lineup. I mean, Crawford and Haniger, Seager, Lewis, right? You're going to see the catchers go back and forth with Murphy and.
Give
Torrens.
Give me 3-4-5.
You're probably looking at Seager, Lewis. Ty France. I don't know what five looks like.
Yeah,
they're rolling out what Crawford one, Haniger in the.
Yeah, I think what you're really thinking is 2-3-4, right? You're sort of looking at Haniger, Seager, Lewis as sort of being the heart of your order. I mean, look, that's not you know, the 27 Yankees clearly, but you're also looking at your division. We've said this a few times. The AL West is down from where it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, credit to Jerry. He was saying the AL West is going to come down as we're ascending. And that's happening, right? The Astros, they may still be good, but they're not what they were a few years ago. Mm-hmm. They've lost some significant dudes. Oakland's lost some dudes, right?
Yep.
Houston, or Texas, rather, is in a rebuild. We don't know what's going to happen there. And the Angels are like a complete wild
Angels
card.
You just never have to worry about.
Right. Like they should have the best team, but they don't because they can't pitch. So
is Pujols 51 or 41?
It's a good question. Yes. And is he going to retire or not? Depends if you ask him or his wife. Apparently on different sides yes. of that. But I don't know. It's funny. I can start writing that script. Like, okay, it's kind of fun. And there's some things you need. Mitch Haniger's got to be healthy. And play at the level that he looked like maybe he was going to turn into a few years ago. Young players have to succeed essentially immediately. You got to see some steps forward for Evan White and others like Lewis and Kyle Lewis and Dylan Moore. Like, those guys can't crater after their breakout years last year. But I could write a little script that makes the Mariners really interesting this year. And with money to spend, and you don't need to wait until next offseason to spend it, maybe that comes in the form of a trade. Go back to like the Marco Gonzalez deal they made a few years ago where you could bring in something like that and make do next year's work during the year.
I don't know if I can say really interesting. I think appropriately what I can say is this is a step forward from a season ago.
For sure.
Which is what it has to be. In this teardown and in this rebuild, and as you're going up, as some of those others are going down, you need this needs to be a step forward. It doesn't need to be a leap. You're not going for it. You didn't spend big. You haven't been hyper aggressive really the last couple years. You've let, you know, some of that aggression that you were in building up your farm system, you've let that mature and grow. But this should be a step forward, hopefully a significant step forward. So in 2022, you're able to take that leap and feel great about it. Then it's beyond interesting or really interesting. Now you're competing to win. Legitimately competing to win.
I just wonder whether or not you can make it interesting enough this year to get there. And obviously, what we say, patience is the shortcut. You don't want to sacrifice anything for it. But at some point, if you're in it, you can't ignore what's happening in front of you, right? Especially if your division ends up being down. You can't ignore that.
Sure.
So I think it makes it a fun season to kind of see what happens.
Bullpen arms kind of work. Sure. Let's see how a six-man rotation works. Let's see if Paxton can stay healthy through spring training, not stub his toe on the agility ladder. Let's see if these young guys can take a step and add. You know, it is remarkable, man. I typed this to you guys last night that Kyle Lewis was Rookie of the Year. J.P. Crawford and Evan White were Gold Glove winners. Mm-hmm. I mean, that happened. I know it was a shortened season. It was a goofy year. It was all of those things. But, you know, that's something to build on, significantly to build on. And those guys take a step forward, then indeed it may become really interesting.
So, you know, we were talking about it's March and spring and sort of how everything feels good this time of year. It's also Taste Washington Wine Month, which, you know, in normal times you get the big Taste Washington event. Largest single region wine and food event in the country. Well, this year, teaming up with restaurants, excuse me, Brock, to offer Taste Washington to go, and Ascend is getting themselves really involved in this. It's pretty cool. It's an elevated spin on it. So they got a whole like specific menu pairing deal. There's like casserole and Cabernet. That's the first week of March here, the first of the seventh. Family heirloom vegetable lasagna or steakhouse bolognese lasagna that feeds two, and it's paired with Le Col 2017 Cabernet Sauvignon from Walla Walla Valley.
Wow, you say that well.
Do I?
Yeah.
Then you get Catch of the Day in Chardonnay. That's okay. March 8th to the 14th. I'll go through more of the food part, but Alder and Fruitwood grilled salmon, miso black cod.
Uh-huh.
Okay, then the third week, 15th to 21st, barbecue with Syrah. So that's a Koji cured and smoked beef short rib.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Who's not into that? So look, just go find all the details. Go to ascendprime.com. You can see what all of these pairings are. I can just tell you straight up, the food is ridiculous. I haven't even had these specific. I've never eaten one thing there that I wasn't like, gosh, that was absurd. That was so good. Right, and just like unique. They told you, remember they had the olive. My buddy sent me a text about the olive oil, like the olive steak that they have there.
What?
Yeah, it's this thing where these Japanese cows are fed only olive husks.
They're just like guarding them.
Yes, and it tastes like the text he sent me said the most hard, difficult to find steak in the world. Something like that. And I had some. Dude, it was like a cross between steak and bacon, except better than both. It was unreal.
Goodness.
It's really unbelievable. I know. So, all right, you go find all these details. Ascendprime.com and go take your wife out for dinner. Go take your husband out for dinner.
What are you doing?
Go take your special someone in your life out for dinner. Go to Ascend Prime. Well, Brock, you may remember that a couple of weeks ago, we went to the old Boston Well to get Eddie Bourget. Eddie Bourget, who coached with new Seahawks offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. And as I was talking to Eddie setting that up, I realized that Eddie coaches Bert Breer's kid in hockey.
Oh, get out of here.
True story. So we bring on Bert. Now, you know, he's an NFL insider and all the stuff he does, Monday Morning Quarterback and all that. He's longtime friend of the show. The person really as responsible for helping me get this job as anybody. Since have we ever told that story on the air? I don't think I have. So. I never have.
No, I don't think so.
All right,
so.
Quick story. Bert, how are you? It's good to have you here.
I'm good. How you doing, Mike?
Really quick story. When I flew out here to interview for this job, 2008, right? 2009, excuse me.
2009.
I had been on my honeymoon in Nicaragua and got the flight was delayed a full 24 hours. I missed the flight here. I got in at like 6 in or like really, really like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, was up at 6 a.m. in order to get picked up for coffee by Rod Arquette, who's now gone. But I didn't know anything about the Seahawks, so I called Bert, who's the only like national guy I knew. He was like, dude, what can you tell me about this team? and he did. He gave me a ton of information, Brock, and everything I knew at our demo that we did together was entirely just Bert's ideas that I had plagiarized and thrown right. Oh, Matt House, they're at a team at a crossroads. I don't know whether they're too old or too young or going to rebuild. Mike Holmgren's gone. So
did he also tell you to trade Griffey?
Oh God. That was like a really, really bad time for the franchise. That was the Jim Mora year, right?
It was heading into it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember there was all that stuff about, like, are they going to blow it up after this? I had no idea, like, Pete Carroll would be the coach a year later. I mean, for everybody listening out there, Pete Carroll was still the coach at USC when this happened. Yep. But, yeah, I mean, it was I remember they were the roster was a disaster. And I think I tried – I tried to like at least give you an idea of why it was where it was.
It was great. And it was enough that I got the job. So, you know, you weren't wrong enough, right, Brock? I mean, it worked out. I must have surprised somebody with some knowledge. I think I threw out the name Lofa Tutupu. That guy's getting older, and the next thing you know, here I am with the job. So if that's where they were.
And here we are. And here we are 12 years later, and you got my kid, my six-year-old's youth hockey coach on.
Unbelievable.
How about that?
Yeah, things have changed. Wow.
Full circle.
We've really come a long way. We've got Eddie Bourget on our podcast. If you had told me that 12 years ago, I'm like, all right, things have gone the wrong direction for all of us. So how different is this Seahawks roster in this moment for them now? Obviously, they have a franchise quarterback still in his prime in Russell Wilson, but they're fighting, Bert. What is going on with the Seahawks and Russell and everything? How do you view this from your spot 12 years later?
Yeah, I mean, like I think it's easy to like look at the fact that they haven't been to a championship game in, what is it, 7 years now or 6 years and say, well, you know, they've really fallen off. But, I mean, they've been on the doorstep, you know, making the playoffs 8 of the last 9 years. I believe the only other team that's done that was New England. And New England's going the wrong direction now. So, you know, I know when you've got the coach that you've got there in Seattle and you got the quarterback that you've got there in Seattle, the bar is raised. And listen, like I, you know, living in New England, you know, I always set that up Brady and Belichick because you grade them on a curve because, you know, you're not going to have them forever. And so you want to make the most of the time that they are there. You know, but I don't think it's not a wholly unhealthy situation. You know, there's some good young talent there and guys like DK Metcalf and Jamal Adams, and you know, we'll see what happens with Shaq Griffin and you know, the contract situation there. But you know, it's still, I think, one of the, you know, top 7 or 8 franchises in the sport. And you know, now they've got a little bit of a quarterback mess on their hands. It's gonna be fascinating to see how they handle it because they've been this team that's sort of operated in a win now way forever. And, you know, I mean, with a coach who's going to be 70 later this year, what does that mean when you've got a 32-year-old quarterback who maybe is acting like he doesn't, like, is sort of like, I mean, I guess the best way to put it is it's like the most passive-aggressive trade demand in league history, right?
Perfect for
like,
Seattle.
Like, he doesn't want out, but if he did want out, this is where he'd want out to. So, you know, it's just the very, very, it's kind of, it's like there are a lot of teams that would trade spots with the Seahawks, but obviously they're in a very awkward situation right now.
Bert, you were in New England, as you said, and you were up close with Brady and Belichick for 2 decades. It's been now a decade for Russ and Pete. How would you characterize, from your perspective, being in these conversations and around them, how would you characterize the relationship right now between Pete and Russ?
Strained, I would say. You know, and I think that you can't look at it without considering all the history. You know, this goes back to, you know, the friction between Russ and, you know, some of the Legion of Boom guys. And it goes back to the contract situations being what they were. And, you know, you remember him, like, you know, and all the noise about him wanting a baseball contract. And, you know, it goes back to the grumbling quietly, you know, in the background about the offensive line and the scheme and what, you know, like all this stuff that's happened over the last 9 years. You know, I'm not saying it's at the forefront now, but it's all sort of lingering there, you know, as kind of part and parcel to what's happening, you know, in the present day. And so, you know, I think that that's sort of the background. And then, you know, really, like, to me, like, this goes back to you know, a couple of meetings that Russ had after the season, one with his own team and then one with Pete, where they really laid out these three goals. And, you know, one of them has been taken care of. That was the offensive scheme and going and hiring Shane Waldron. But, you know, wanting the offensive line fixed and then wanting communication on the future of the franchise and the vision for the franchise. You know, I think, you know, Pete, John Schneider, all the people that run the show over there, I think, you know, they were happy to have those discussions with Russ. When he took them public, though, to me, that's sort of, you know, pressing the nuclear button to some degree. And when you do that, like now all of a sudden, you know, teams are going to, you know, a team is going to look back and say, okay, like we've dealt with this on a year-to-year basis. It's been awkward. It's been weird at points. And now, you know, the guy is just sort of, I guess, pulling a lever we never thought he'd pull on us. So we've got a decision to make. Mm.
How unique is this? I mean, is this something you see elsewhere around the league? I mean, is tension between a franchise quarterback and his head coach the norm over time? Is it just that these guys have been together for a decade and over time all of that stuff just kind of, you know, builds up and up and never really goes away? Is it specific to these two and their personalities? How do you view that?
I think, like, as a quarterback gets into his 30s, there's a little bit more urgency, you know, and I think they think a little bit more about the way that they're going to be viewed when they're all done. And they think about how limited maybe their chances to compete for championships have become. You know, and I think that, like, you know, you can look at situations that never got like this, but, you know, with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, Brady with Belichick and Rodgers with McCarthy, and neither of those guys are playing for those coaches anymore. You know, but there definitely was friction, you know, and when a quarterback sort of gets to a certain point in his career, he's got, again, Brock, I think you can probably speak to this, like, you know, it gets to the point where he's got, like, more formed ideas of the way he thinks things should be run, you know, about the way that you should play to get the most out of him, and then what should be around him, you know. And so the fact that there's tension between a quarterback in his 30s and a Super Bowl-winning coach isn't new. We've seen it before. You know, I think even at one point, like, that existed between Joe Montana and the 49ers. And, you know, obviously I bring up the examples of Brady and Rodgers more recently. I think the idea of making these things as public as they've become is pretty new. And so I think with Deshaun Watson publicly, you know, I think taking his fight public to some degree and Aaron Rodgers doing what he did the day after the NFC Championship game, I think it's sort of given cover for other quarterbacks who might want to do that. And obviously now we see Russell doing that. So the public nature of it's new, but I think we have seen, like, tension between quarterback and the coach before, you know, really over time, but, you know, certainly, you know, fairly recently with star guys like Brady and Rodgers.
How many other elite quarterbacks, Bert, or even players in this league have an agent as aggressive as Russ's?
You know, it's interesting because somebody brought this up to me and I hadn't even thought of this, right? But, like, do you guys like and I love it, like, since you guys cover all the sports, I'd be interested to hear your perspective on this. Someone brought up to me that Mark Rodgers might not have a choice. And here's what he meant by that. Like that's his only football client, right? Like, so, like, if you're Brady's agent or you're Rodgers' agent or you're Peyton Manning's agent back in the day or you're Patrick Mahomes' agent, you have other clients across the league. And so if you want to sort of make phone calls and see what might be out there for him elsewhere and sort of explore these sorts of things, you can do it because you can just call those teams and it can be under the guise of, like, well, you know, I'm just calling this team about this player. And, oh, by the way, what about my quarterback, you know? Mark Rodgers can't do that because he doesn't have other NFL clients. So somebody brought that up to me and I thought it was an interesting, like, nuance, like, to the whole situation here.
Yes.
And that, like, Mark Rodgers might not have a choice, but
hold
be aggressive
on
here.
But Bert, oh, great point. Whoever brought that is a really interesting idea. Why doesn't he have any other NFL clients? Like, at some point, like, it's been a decade he's been with Russ or close to it. Like, no one else has taken the bait on Mark Rodgers as an NFL agent. Why?
Yeah, well, Mike, if you were a baseball agent, would you, like, look at the two sports? Would you want to represent football players?
No, absolutely not. But he seems to.
Yeah.
But he seems to. And he seems to be trying to do it like it's baseball when obviously it is not. And I'm not surprised. I think Mark Rogers is like, you talk about friction between the quarterback and the head coach. My view from where I sit is that like 80% of it is caused by the agent.
Yeah, and I think that there's like, look, like I think if you're in Mark Rogers' position, obviously the genesis of that relationship between Rogers and Wilson is baseball. And, you know, I mean, look, I talk to coaching agents who are like, I wouldn't want to represent players at all in the NFL because the contracts aren't guaranteed, the careers are short, it can be over just like that, and the level of maintenance is really high. And so, you know, I could certainly see why a baseball agent or a basketball agent might want to represent a quarterback because the conditions are different with certain quarterbacks, but might not want to go in headlong on representing football players in general. So my guess would be, Mike, that is probably more related to what Mark Rogers wants. That he just doesn't want to deal with the headache of representing football players because there's just a lot more to it and there's a lot less upside than maybe there is in baseball.
Do you know who made that really good point to you about the agent? It was Eddie B.
It was Eddie Bourget, yes, yeah, I believe. Okay. Eddie's got a lot to say.
Yeah. That's right.
So let's cut as much as we can right to the heart of it. You talked about the most passive-aggressive, the most Seattle way to do this. What is at the very, very center and core of this spat as we find ourselves in right now?
I think on one side, it's the team – wanting to build something that's just continue to build something that's sustainable and fulfill, you know, what the coach's vision for the team is, right? And that vision, in Pete's defense, has been excellent for the Seahawks over the last 11 years, right? They've made the playoffs 9 times. They've been to 2 Super Bowls. They've won a championship. So it's hard to argue with the results that Pete has produced. And, you know, that vision is in conflict with what Russell Wilson thinks will put him on this pedestal as maybe an all-time great. And I do think that a huge part of this in Russell's head is, how do I become an icon? We've heard him talk about becoming an owner, right? Like, how do I take this to the next level? How do I become the sort of star that transcends sports? And, you know, I don't think it's unrelated to like who he's married to either. Like, I think that's part of it. Like, you know, and I've heard people in the Seahawks organization talk about like the quote unquote celebrity quarterback and what comes along with having the celebrity quarterback now. I think that there's just, you know, the piece over here on the team side, which is like, we still think doing things Pete's way is the right way and it's brought us great results. And over here you have Russell who feels like, I can get more out of like you could get more out of me and I could be a bigger star and I could kind of maybe get to this next level of being a professional athlete if you do these things and you won't do these things for me. So I need to go seek out a platform somewhere else where I can become that. And I don't think that it's any like, I you look at the teams, guys, like, and look, like, I think the one that makes football sense is New Orleans, and there's a little bit of a relationship there between Peyton and Russell Wilson that I think influences that. But the other three, the Bears, the Raiders, the Cowboys, I don't think those are better football situations than Seattle. Do you?
No, and it feels, and you know, it feels like all four of those teams
those
were thrown out there as red herrings because none of them have the draft capital to trade for Russell Wilson.
Right, and so like the other thing is like the three of them to me, like the Bears, the Raiders, and the Cowboys are all about platform, right? Like to me, like that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Chicago and Dallas, huge markets. All three of those are iconic franchises, right? And can connect you into things that maybe, I don't know, like he feels like Seattle can't connect them to, and maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong about that. But I think that if you look at it, like those are about platform, and so. You know, and I think the frustrating thing for Seattle has to be if they look at this, it's like if you are going to do – if let's just say – and I'm not saying they should, but let's just say they trade Russell Wilson. You look at those four teams, does any one of them provide a clear path to your long-term answer at quarterback?
No.
I don't – like I mean, unless you really like Derek Carr, right? They got Derek Carr in the 17th pick. The Cowboys have the 10th pick, which maybe gets you one of the top four guys, but maybe not this year. And, like, they can't trade Dak right now because he's not signed. So Dak would need to agree to a new deal. And if Dak is in that position, do you know how much leverage he would have over the Seahawks? I mean, you'd have to pay him $40, $45 million a year with the amount of leverage that he would have in that situation. And then the Saints don't have a quarterback to trade you. They pick 28th in the first round. The Bears don't have a quarterback to trade you. They pick 20th in the first round. So all four of those teams, you want to talk about frustrating if you're Seattle. It's like, dude, like you aren't saying you want out, but then you're giving us four teams that you would want out too, and none of those four teams can provide us a clear path to having a long-term answer at quarterback unless we wind up doing a deal with Dak Prescott that would be record-setting because of the amount of leverage that he has.
And why would you want to do that with Dak over Russ?
And that's presuming Dak wants to come to Seattle. If he didn't want to come to Seattle, all he would have to do is not sign his franchise tender, and they can't trade him.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's just, I mean, like, you look at those four teams, and almost, like, in a way, guys, when I look at those four teams, it's almost like it's trolling the Seahawks. You know what I mean?
I know it's exactly what it feels like. Is there none of, I wouldn't trade, would you trade Russell for anything? The only thing that I would think about trading Russell Wilson for would be a franchise quarterback on his rookie deal. Other than that, I have a franchise quarterback. I don't care how many picks you offer me or whatever.
How about,
like,
Deshaun? How about if there was a three-way deal put together, and somehow Russell could end up in one of those three locales, the Texans can get a bounty of picks and you get Deshaun Watson.
Why would I want a guy that is like Russell Wilson, similar, you know, have some similar skill set, but also misses a ton of games with injury, as opposed to Russell, who misses zero?
6 years younger.
But still getting paid
the same amount of money. Deshaun would, I mean, I think Deshaun would definitely make me think about it like that. There aren't a ton of scenarios where I consider moving him, but that would be one of them. You know, and I mean, look, like, it's sort of hard to, the hard thing to kind of parse here, guys, too, and this is what was so tough about that, like, that trade request, non-trade request, whatever we want to call it. Like, to me, it's like, so I look at what Aaron Rodgers did, right, the day after the NFC Championship game, it was the day of the NFC Championship game. To me, like, knowing that situation, that was 100% Aaron Rodgers trying to put pressure on the Packers to be aggressive this offseason and to do what the Chiefs did for Mahomes, what the Bills have done for Josh Allen, you know, what the Bucs have done for Tom Brady. Like, he wants them to be aggressive and act with urgency. And at least, like, on the front end of this, I think that's what Russ is doing, is, like, he saw Rodgers do it, so that gave him cover to try to do the same thing. And he felt like maybe he needed to put urgency on the organization to act now, to try to put pieces around him and to sort of change the operation to his liking. You know, but there's also, you know, there are whispers out there that maybe he just wants out. Maybe the Seahawks are fed up with him. And it's just, you know, at this point, like, it's just sort of like, you know, depends on who you talk to really try to get inside Russell's head and figure out what he's really thinking here.
Hey, you mentioned earlier that the Seahawks are one of the top 6, 7, 8 franchises in the NFL. What are the top five? I'll put you on the spot. I know it's not, like, something you've been thinking about.
I think the Seahawks might be in the top five. All right, so
what are they? What are the best franchises in the NFL?
So I still think you got to put New England there, right? Like, even though they had a bad year, I think you still put New England there. Now, if you're talking about the next 5 years, we could argue about that, but based on where they are now, I think they're still there. I would put Kansas City in that group. I would put Green Bay in that group just for consistent contention. And I think Green Bay and Seattle are sort of similar in that way.
Pittsburgh,
I think, is in that group. Baltimore is really good, right? Like, I think a lot of people, I think you have to have respect for the way Baltimore's done business. New Orleans has been pretty consistently competitive, but they're right there, Mike. I mean, how many would you I can't count more than maybe one or two that you would put clearly in front of Seattle right now. Like, if you're going to say, okay, like, Kansas City is set up in a really incredible way going forward, and we can argue whether that's just Mahomes or if it's the organization as a whole. Like, Kansas City's really humming now, though, right? Like, so, like, say, okay, we can put Kansas City clearly in front of them. Is there anybody else that you will put clearly in front of Seattle, just as far as, like, you know, the operation of the place and how consistent the place has been and the people that are running the place?
No, I don't think I would. But it's funny. I mean, you know, listening to sports radio here over the course of the last few weeks and, you know, Pete runs unchecked and Russell and Pete are feuding and do you have to trade your franchise quarterback? And, you know, your people are saying the coaches doesn't understand the modern game of football because he wants to run the ball. You would think that this is an organization about to be blown apart in some way by the battle here between their two big names, Russell and Pete. But, you know, when you talk to someone from the outside, you're pointing and saying he's still maybe a top five organization.
Mike, and I think what we're hitting on here is, like, I think it's 100% the Seahawks' frustration, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's why this isn't like Deshaun, you know, like, is – like, you look at, like, Deshaun, like, I think we all understand why Deshaun's frustrated, right? But that place is, like, Houston's been a clown show for the last, like, 6 months, right? Like, you can totally get why Deshaun Watson's frustrated. Like, you know, I think there's part of the Seahawks frustration here is, do you know how good you have it? Like, you know, like you're in the playoffs every freaking year. You know, you played with generational defenses. Like, you now have, like, a really good young receiver in DK Metcalf. You've got a veteran in Tyler Lockett you're throwing to. You got a promising tight end in Will Disley. Like, you've had a running game that's been, I mean, I'd say top five in the NFL over the last 9 years. Like, I think there's a part of the Seahawks frustration where it's like, we've bent over backwards and we've tried to do everything you've asked us to do, and we've maintained a consistent contender while we did that. What more do you want? You know what I mean? Like, so I think that there's a huge part of it for the Seahawks. Their frustration is, like, they're giving Russell what I think a lot of other quarterbacks would love to have.
My last question here for you, Burton, sir, appreciate the time. Is Russell a Seahawk in 2022?
Yes, but I'll say two things. I was 90-10 on that, 95-5 on that when he first one on the Dan Patrick show, whatever that was ago. I don't know. I mean, what was that? Maybe
three weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, so I was probably 95-5 at that point. Like, now I'm closer to like 60-40. So that'd be the first thing I'd say. I just don't know if Pete and John are at the point where they're fed up or not. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe they eventually get there. The second point I'd make on this is I don't think Russell finishes his career in Seattle anymore. And I think that there's a decent chance that he's done his last contract as a Seahawk. So, and I think it'd be 35, 36, right? When this one expires. But I think that there's a decent chance that he's done his last contract as a Seahawk as well. So, I just, you know, it sort of feels like the friction's kind of gotten to the point where they have to have some sort of come to Jesus meeting. And, you know, if I'm Pete and John, the way I approach this going forward is, like, we're either, you know, at some point we have to, like, either put this thing to bed, all the tension, all the backbiting, all the grumbling, we either have to put that to bed for good, or we have to figure out what we're going to do going forward.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot to unpack. So we're going to take some time to think a little bit more on this. 60-40 is not that high. I mean, you know, 60-40. I still think, to me,
well,
it's 80-20.
Here's the thing.
60-40.
You know what? Here's the thing, Mike. So part of this is, like, because of all of this, and I think you guys have to consider this too, because of all of this, like, John Schneider and Pete Carroll do not have to shop Russell Wilson, right? Calls are going to come because of all of this. Like, what the situation Russell Wilson has created is going to mean that teams are going to be calling the Seahawks and offering things the same way teams are calling the Texans and offering things for Deshaun Watson. And so, you know, the question becomes, if the tension lingers for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, does someone put something in front of the Seahawks? Again, they don't have to shop him. These calls will come. Like, is somebody going to put something in front of the Seahawks where they're like, we really need to think about this? And that's the question I can't answer.
It's a heck of a question. Albert Breer, longtime friend of the show and partially responsible for this show even existing. So for everybody who hates me, you can just blame Albert. It's his fault.
And Bert, if you wouldn't mind asking Eddie B that question.
Yes, please.
You know, and next time we have you on, we'll get his insights.
We need
as well.
That. And you can find the Albert Breer show all over wherever you get your podcasts, right? Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts,
that's
the whole
right.
thing. So, all right.
That's right. That's right. I guess we have the Jim Mora Seahawks to thank for it too, right, Mike?
Yes. Well, Jim Mora plays a big role in this show. You may remember he took some pretty nasty shots at my partner Brock Heward one day. We have some of that. It's right in the
really?
Open. Oh yeah, you never heard this, Kyle? Do we have any of the Bird?
No.
Jim Mora sound we could play for Bird.
Yeah, it was when I was questioning Josh Rosen's toughness during a live broadcast.
Well, you got that
at UCLA,
wrong.
And yeah, I ended up being wrong on that one.
Yeah, way wrong. Yeah, he turned out to be a heck of a pro.
And Jim didn't appreciate some of my comments, so at a press conference, he lost his mind on me.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Heward has to say
about anything.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's like not just didn't like your take. He doesn't like your credibility, Brock.
No,
that's pretty tough.
Yeah, he came on the show like a week later and was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, he didn't even, like, it was like he didn't remember it.
I might show up at the Rock Bottom tonight just to boo Salt, just because he booed me.
That's when he was the head coach here, he said that.
That's unbelievable.
He's a beauty.
All right, buddy.
How are you, Bert?
Good to talk to you. We'll talk again. It really, it's amazing that Joel Jim Mora thinks that he did that as a head coach, Brock, is unique. Let's just say that. But all right, so there's a lot in there real quick here. Of all the things you just heard from Albert, what jumps out the most?
60-40.
Yeah.
I mean, you're nearly at a 50-50.
Or even the fact that Russ is going to, won't finish his career here in Seattle.
Yes. And I asked him 2022. I don't think he heard 2022. I think he was referencing the 2021. When it came to the 60-40,
agreed. He's talking this year, this upcoming season.
That it's getting that close. And honestly, as he was speaking, I was thinking about John and Pete. Okay, and he's right. John doesn't have to go shop, wrestle around. You don't have to create storylines. You don't have to get front offices leaking information to Schefter and others about the Seahawks are now shopping. So they're not doing that yet. But I did think about, what if they do? What if it gets to the point where John and Pete have to look at each other and go, okay, are we picking up the phone right now? Like, are we picking up the phone and actively now calling? Because I don't think they're there right now. They're listening. They're and largely due to Russell. Russell's created all of this conversation, so they're listening to everybody. But as far as them being the ones to actually pick up the red phone and go, okay, we understand that the minute we do this, it's going to take 60-40 to probably the other way, at least 40-60 or who knows.
I mean, I call me crazy. I'm still at like 90-10 that Russ is going to be here.
Agreed.
Like,
but as we get closer, I'm worried about Schneider. He is in a vulnerable position here. These other 31 teams know he can be taken advantage of right now because he's got four picks 6 weeks ahead of the draft. He cannot live his life like that.
But he also...
They know he is ripe for the picking right now.
Yeah, but go through those teams. None of those options make sense for the Seahawks.
You can get Travis Homer and David Moore.
Stop.
We could give you some
Stop.
Seven-string tackles.
John Schneider is two things, unequivocally, two things. Connected and risk-taking. He's both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So he is connected to the other 31 GMs, even the newbies and everybody else. And they probably would love to get on the phone with a guy as experienced as John, but the veteran guys out there as well. He is as connected as any GM in this league. And he has shown over 12 years that he's willing to take as big a risk as anybody else in this league.
Yep.
He is both of those things. And thus he's entertaining phone calls. And to Kyle's point, or to Bert's point too, if anybody is most annoyed, I don't think it's Pete. I mean, Pete has dealt with annoyance after annoyance after annoyance in his entire run here and doesn't mind it. But I think John is severely annoyed. Severely annoyed.
Okay, but he can, so what? Okay, so you're annoyed. I mean, like, you know,
Salk.
People get to be annoyed. Yeah, you get to be annoyed. You can be annoyed at Russ. Russ can be annoyed at you. At the end of the day, I haven't heard anything that comes close to being a tradable package that you would say yes to if you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll. You have a franchise quarterback who doesn't get hurt, Now, the only thing that all right, fine, you could maybe tempt me with Deshaun Watson. You're right. You make a good point about him being 6 years younger, Brock. Fine. But other than that,
yep.
Unless you find me a franchise quarterback on his rookie deal that I'm going to have for a couple of years, because that's obviously the number one thing to have in all of football. Unless I have that, I don't see anything I trade him for. Sorry. Like, I got Russell Wilson. I'm good. Figure it out.
Okay, but you also got to get to the point. If Russell doesn't want to be here.
No, if Russell comes out and says that, that's fine. But Bird has it. The best thing he said, Brock, don't kid yourself. It's not 60-40. It's that this is the most passive-aggressive trade request in the history of the NFL. What could be more perfect for the Great Northwest than a passive-aggressive trade request? Well, I'm not saying I want to be traded. Hey, Russ, if you want to be traded, come out and say so. Then we can have that conversation.
I didn't say I want to be traded.
Right.
But if...
Well, the fact that he hasn't said he wants to be traded tells me that he doesn't want to be traded. Don't trade him.
Michael, if you 10 years ago, 15 years ago, on airwaves up in the Northeast, and we're still searching for this audio, and we haven't been able to find it yet. If it's 10, 15 years ago, a young Mike Salk said, you know what? It might be smart to trade Tom Brady.
All right. Now, first of all, that was said nationally.
Because you may get so much back. And he's become, what, a celebrity quarterback.
Yep.
Salk was a Matt Cassel guy.
He's no longer the first one there, the last one to leave. Yep. He's no longer just committed. He wants to be an icon. He's married a supermodel. He wants to be a mogul. He wants to be bigger than this place. And you know what? In your old baseball way of thinking, Mike, is you were covering the Red Sox and he had a baseball mind, an analytical mind. He said, man, this is the point where you sell high and you get more back than you're ever going to get for him. Russell's 32.
He's only won 4 Super Bowls since then. So, you know, got it right.
Does it ever get to a point in Mike Salk's analytical mind? Trade Felix. Should have traded him.
All those things are different. You got an elite franchise quarterback, and he's still in his prime. And what you get back in football isn't as valuable to me as what you get in baseball.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. I've learned my lesson on that one. I'm not trading Russell Wilson. Sorry.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Our little Blue 88 to finish this off. It's been a wild ride today.
You said it, man. February's been fantastic. And now we're into March and free agency begins and... the draft will be here before we know it. Spring training's going down. Like, there's been just these podcasts, kind of, I think, like the radio shows in town, right? Like, oh, man, get to February. How are we going to do this? Nah, not this year. Not this year. Plenty to talk about.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, question one for you, because we had some news, this week, is J.J. Watt, sourcing himself, chooses Arizona and is going to play for the Cardinals alongside Chandler Jones. Forgetting about how good they'll be, why would he go to Arizona? Why that? Why Arizona?
Yeah, and he's a smart enough guy, right? Tom Brady last year.
I don't know. I used to think so.
Tom Brady said what? Tom Brady looked at all the rosters and said, man, I can go to Tampa Bay and we can add a lineman and Tristan Wirfs in the top 10, and we can add a couple pieces. I can bring Gronk with me. That defense is ready to go. Let's go win a world championship. J.J. Watt had lots of suitors, and there were a lot of people that thought he'd go to Green Bay or go to Pittsburgh, play with his brother, Buffalo, ready-made to win a championship, right? I mean, that's the last thing J.J. needs. He's been NFL Defense Player of the Year a couple times. He's a Hall of Famer. Go win a title. And, whoa, you pick Arizona? So I think that's perplexing on that end. I think this is also a J.J. Watt that says, I need to go someplace at this stage of my career, smart enough to know what he is and what he isn't, and say, I need to get one-on-ones. I need to go into a system where I am going to be freed up, where they are a blitzing crew, where I got Chandler Jones on the other side that's going to get a lot of the attention, and it's going to give me the opportunity to still be an incredibly impactful player because I don't have to beat double teams. I don't have to worry about getting chipped. I'm going to have more opportunity than I've had and maybe would have in Buffalo or maybe even in Pittsburgh with a 3-down front. And I got to do some of the grind and some of the work that I've done in the past. Let me go here and let me be free to finish my career with the last couple years, adding, I don't know, 20 more sacks to it. And on top of it, if we do win, if I can help that team win, if I can get to the playoffs, it's only going to add to my lore.
We'll go question number 2. So, well, you got J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones in Arizona. Obviously, you got Aaron Donald in L.A. We got Bosa and the rest of that crew in San Francisco. So I know a lot of the focus will be on what do the Seahawks need to do on their offensive line to prepare for that. But I'll ask you in sort of a different way, what do the Seahawks need to do on their defensive line to compete with that and have the ability to get after quarterbacks themselves? That leads you to Carlos Dunlap. What happens with him this offseason?
Well, we got, 2 weeks until the Seahawks have to make a decision. And this is part of what Carlos did when he bet on himself and got traded here, is he moved money into a roster guarantee the middle of March when the new league year begins. And the Seahawks have to make a decision to say, are we going to pick up this $3.5 million or are we not? And that is the conundrum, and I think the dilemma they find themselves in now. You heard rumblings that, they're not going to be able to do that or don't want to do that. And then by doing that, you're really triggering then the $10 million, $10.5 million that he's owed next year. So a $14 million cap hit, I think, is a little rich for their blood. So I think you're going to see them spend the next 2 weeks frantically trying to get a deal done. I think J.J. Watt just set the market. I mean, if you're Carlos Dunlap at this stage of your career with what you did the second half of the season when you became a Seahawk, I think you have every right to say, great, okay, don't give me that $3 million. Let's do a new deal and give me J.J.'s deal. 2 years, $31 million, 23 guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You doing it, Salk?
I don't know.
I mean, you don't know what K.J. Wright's number is. You don't know what Jamal Adams is realistically, if he is in anywhere realistically, asking in his contract. I mean, there is a lot of work to do. Mm. We spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about Russell and Pete, rightfully so. But, why haven't they spoken? Why hasn't John? Well, John's kind of busy. John got a lot of work to do. John's got a very difficult draft to get ready for, to try to find within four picks is all he's got right now, and to try to study all of these prospects without having a combine. John's got a very difficult job to do with a shrinking cap, trying to figure out deals for Jamal and Carlos and prioritizing those, and Shaq Griffin possibly. I mean, there is every single minute of every day of John Schneider, especially now for the next 2 weeks with this Dunlap kind of balloon payment coming, there's a lot of work to do. And I think you've got to figure out some of the other pieces of those puzzle before you can really hammer down with Carlos. But that is a guy that I want to see, need to see in a Seahawk uniform in 21, because we saw it for the first, 8-9 weeks of the year without him. You are one of the historically worst defenses in the history of the league. You need impactful players on the defensive line. He, I think, wants to be here. He'd love to be taken care of. I don't think he would slow down his motor if he was, because I think he loves playing for this organization. I hope they can find a way to get something done.
All right, question number three. We talk about sort of what Russ has accomplished and what his problems are here and why he's gone public with it. But some of the effect of it is not just on the fans or the organization, but how about his teammates, and specifically guys on the offensive line and guys who've been here for a while. I mean, I don't know how all of them have taken this. We've mentioned Dwayne Brown as being one really important one. And if I'm Russ, I sure hope he's reached out behind the scenes to talk with Dwayne Brown and make sure that that's a guy who hasn't abandoned him, because he's been one of his top supporters, right? So if you're Russell Wilson, Brock, what are you doing to make sure that if you are still here in Seattle, your teammates don't hate you?
Well, you better see DK Metcalf and him working out. Mike Robb spoke to this over the weekend, and Mike Robinson felt like, man, Russ is dividing that locker room. And I don't think he's dividing defensive players. I think it's a divisive move offensively. And Mike Robb, kind of sharing that perspective, as we heard from Ray Roberts a couple weeks ago on our local airwaves here. And he spoke, I think, for the linemen. I think the best thing Russell could do is fly Dwayne down to San Diego, or even better, down to his place in Cabo, and show them working out together. I don't need to see you on the beach with wide receivers. I need to see you down there maybe with Jordan Simmons, maybe with Dwayne Brown, absolutely, front and center down there, saying, no. we're still in this thing. Dwayne's got my back. We've got to take some steps forward here. I think that would be the most beneficial, because there is some healing that will have to be done. Certainly with that offensive line.
All right, there you go. Well, that'll do it for us. That's a lot.
Jeez, I felt action packed.
I am exhausted. I can't handle this anymore. I do this every day.
Yeah.
And longer.
It's why we only do an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh.
And we're missing Howdy too. And we're missing Howdy. Howdy usually fills
carries a lot of water.
He fills a lot of space. Yes. Physically, I mean. All right, it's time for us to go. We will be back with you next week, right, Brock? We're still here next
week? Yes, sir.
Week?
Yep.
All right, sounds good. We'll see where all of this goes, and until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!